We've got another guest with us today. When we were going through all the different ministries that we wanted to be able to bless as a church, you know, one thought was not only location, you know, some close, some far away, some international, but also different areas. And as you've seen, we've had people helping the mentally disabled. We've had women type ministries going on. But one thing we said is we wanted to make sure that one of the ministry we helped was a ministry focusing on men. And so today, one of the ones you might have seen that you didn't know anything about when we were voting on giving out the money was a group called Manna House. It's actually called the Titus Community. But Manna House is this house where over the last 24 years, over 800 men who have been through different struggles and pains and hurts in their life have come to be ministered to be discipled, and then to be sent out. It's a really neat ministry, and I'm so excited y'all are going to get to hear about it today. So today we have the founder, the leader of the Titus Community, Bob Mersman, to come and visit with us. Bob.
Thank you, Pastor Blake. Appreciate that. And on behalf of Titus Community and the Manna House, I want to extend our thanks and appreciation to Waller Baptist Church for giving us an awesome gift that we can use there to help the ministry and help the guys that are there at the Manna House. And, you know, the Manna House is just the name of the house we gave the place where the residents live. It's an old house that was built in about 1930. My grandparents lived in that house from about 1960 to early 80s when my grandmother passed away. And then it was a rent house for a while. And a friend of mine and I were going to church in Katy. And the pastor told us that church was not in the building. Church is out in the community. So I want you to get out in the community and have church. And so that kind of spurred us on, a friend and I, to start a ministry. And we chose the property there where my grandparents lived, and what we call the Manna House now, is a place to start a recovery place for people that had addictions. And addictions are a terrible thing. It's a terrible affliction that affects so much of our community. You know, well over 100,000 a year pass away from just alcohol abuse, and about another 100,000 from drug over abuse and abuse, and it's such a terrible thing. And it's not only that affects the people that have the addiction, it affects the whole family. You know, addicts are the most selfish people in this world. They think that they're only hurting themselves, and they don't realize that everybody that knows them is affected by what they're doing. And so it's a terrible thing to overcome. It is a trap of the devil is what it really is. And they have to have an opportunity to escape and to get set free from that in order for them to ever live a life that's going to be productive and useful and something that will honor God. So that's been our objective all these years, is to try to give people an opportunity that's been caught up in this addiction thing, the ability or just the opportunity to learn and to be set free and to learn how to live life the right way, in the way God intended for us all to live. And so that's always been the objective. That's been my assignment, is to provide a place and an opportunity. And we have a program there that teaches what the Word of God says. We teach what what God really intended for us to do and to begin with, the way we're supposed to live our life. And we use the tools that, you know, that are for people that have addictions. And there was a 12-step program. There's, you know, there's many teachings and there's many good literature that talks about how do you apply the Word of God to our life and learn how to live the right way. So we are transferred or transformed by the renewing of our mind, and so we have to learn to think better in order to be able to do the right things. So that's what we want to do at the Manor House, is to be able to present a program and an opportunity for them to learn and to be set free from this terrible addiction. You know, people have asked me, how did I get into this? We've been there for almost, well over 24 years now. It'll be 25 pretty soon. But people ask me, well, how did you get into this anyway? Well, we started it at the beginning, and I have a son that was very addicted to alcohol. His life was a mess. And, you know, like any good codependent parent, I tried to fix him. You know, get him out of jail, you know, take him to court, hire a lawyer, do all those sort of things, you know, try to get him jobs and all that. And it went on for a number of years, I guess, before I think it was God that obviously told me one day that, you know, what you're doing is not helping. You know, so I finally got the courage to tell my son. I said, okay, I love you, but if this is what you want to do, you're going to have to go somewhere else because you're ruining the whole family. And so, of course, he got mad and left. Took another couple of years for him to live that lifestyle before he ever began to get the understanding that what he was doing was not working, was not to what he wanted to do. And he did tell me later that he said, I finally just got tired of living that way. Well, he wasn't the first resident we had at the Manor House, but he was the first one to complete the program. He was the first one who graduated back in 1998. And I saw what God did in his life, the way it transformed and changed his life. It was a total mess and a wreck and going nowhere into something that was beautiful and productive. And, you know, he lives out in the Seattle area now, has a wife, child, and, you know, works a job, and he's, you know, most very responsible. And, you know, there's absolutely no greater joy than to see the ones you love walking after the truth. And so that's what I saw happen in my son's life, and I've seen it happen in a number of other people's lives. And there's absolutely no greater joy than to see that, because you know it's something only God can do. There's nothing that we can do as at the Manor House or anywhere else. A person has to surrender and admit that their life isn't working. And until they get to that spot, nothing much changes. Circumstances can change, you know, jobs can change, location can change and all that. But until the heart changes, nothing much changes. It's just more of the same. So there's there's one verse that... Well, you know, there's a number of verses, but there's one, my go-to verse, favorite one is, comes from 2 Timothy 2:24, which says that a servant of the Lord must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to everyone, able to teach, gently instructing those who are in opposition, in the hopes that God would grant them repentance, and they would come to their senses and begin to know what the truth really is, and that they would be able to escape from the trap that the devil has taken him captive in to do his will. And that describes so adequately, you know, the process of addiction, because it is a trap that people have been captured and taken in to do the devil's will. And until they are set free, and the only thing that can set someone free from this is the power of God working in someone's heart. And so that is what has to take place. And at the Manor House, the program we have there, the ministry pays for well over 60% of the cost for the residents to be there. And that's done by, just like you donated to us, we have others that donate to what we're doing there. And we work on volunteers and donations. We do ask the residents to pay some. And mostly family, friends, and others will help them, you know, at the first part of the program until they can get to the point where they can work and earn their pay and pay for their way. And so that's the objective, is for them to learn to be responsible, to do the things that are required, and to live their life in a way that is productive and helpful and honors God in the process. And so that's what we're about. And we thank you very much for your support. And if we can help in any sort of way at the Manor House, that's what we want to do, because that's why we're there. So thank y'all very much.
That's a great story on just how God can, you know, even within our ministries, affect our own lives and also affect the lives of so many more people. And so thankful that you took that call to do that, Bob. It kind of goes along with the sermon today. You know, this thought of sometimes God calls us to things that are hard. Sometimes God brings things into our lives that are hard. And there's this word that I know you know well and I know well, and it's called fear, right? Fear. It amazes me how many times in the scriptures God says, fear not. But in my life, and I know I would suppose in your life, this word fear just comes back and back and back. You know, I was thinking, I'm sure when the pastor said, go out and do something, you know, that first thought might have been fear. You know, can I do that? Is that possible? You know, in your life, you know, it may be other issues that you just say, I am fearful of. So in this series, what we started with this thought of, what in our Christian life do we need to just say no more to? We started with no more excuses. Last week we went on no more complaining. And today I just want to bring with you a simple thought of no more fear. No more fear. Now, kind of like last week, I realize just to say no more fear, fear is going to be natural. It's going to come up. Same way with complaining. You know, when things happen that we don't like, it's automatic to start with complaining. But here's the challenge. Instead of staying in those things, I want to give you a tool to use that when complaining comes up. Last week I said, here's your tool. Think about this attribute of God. Think about the goodness of God. It's amazing when we focus in on the goodness of God, the things that we're complaining about suddenly shrink. Well, for fear, here's what I want. In my life and in your life, when you feel that fear rising up in you, this is what I want fear to be, the red flag. The fear is simply that your eyes are more on the situation that is in front of you than they are on God's faithfulness. So when fear comes into your mind, the first thing you should start thinking is, God is faithful. God is faithful. Isn't that true? I mean, if we're afraid of something, really, if we bring it back to the core problem that we're having is we're going, I don't know if God can get me through this. I don't know if God knew what was going on in my life. I don't know if I'm going to have to take control here. I'm afraid of what's going to happen. It is a lack of focusing in on the faithfulness of God. Let me give you a real simple definition that you can go to for faithfulness of God when you have a fearful situation. Number one, God sees. Number two, God knows. Number three, God cares. And number four, God will intervene. Isn't that nice to think? When you're in a fearful situation, you need to understand that God sees, God knows, God cares, and God will intervene. God sees what I'm going through. You know, so many times we kind of feel like, does God really even see this? But it's important to know that He doesn't just see what's going on. He's not so busy with the rest of the world that He doesn't know individually what's going on. But God knows. He knows the implications of what's going on in your life. I don't know if you ever hit that. I hit that as a dad a lot. You know, Rebecca asked me, well, why didn't you do this? Didn't you see this was happening? And you know, and I'll look at her and I go, yeah, I saw that that was happening, but I didn't know the implications of that. I didn't know the implications of what was going to happen with this thing that I was seeing. But here's what I want you to know today, that God doesn't only see what's going on in your life, but He knows in and out, more than you know, the implications of what's going on in your life. But more than that, not only does God see, not only does God know, but God cares. He cares about what's going on. He cares about whatever it is you're afraid of. He cares about your situation, whether it's small or whether it's large. God cares. And then that final one is that God will intervene. God's up to something. He might not intervene like we want Him to intervene. He might not do what we want Him to do, but He has a perfect plan, and He is faithful. He is faithful. I want us to turn to Psalms chapter 92. I'm sorry, 91. Missed it by one. Psalms 91. And I want us to look at a series of scripture where David is talking about how God helps him in fearful times. It says in verse number 1 of Psalms 91, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High. Now, isn't that a beautiful thought? It's amazing how shelter wasn't that important of a word 2 years ago, right? 3 years ago. We didn't really think that much about that word shelter. But in the last year or so, as we've had to shelter in place, we've kind of got that idea of there might be something out there that we need to be worried about. And so let's get to a shelter location and shelter in place. Well, the psalmist here says, whoever dwells in the shelter of a God, some things are going to happen. So I want to talk about this morning. As we think about fear, I want us to think about the faithfulness of God. And in this, what we're going to see in verse 1 is, and verse 2 and verse 3 and verse 4 is that God's going to give us some pictures that we can think of as we're going through fearful times. It says, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Lord Most High, if we continue that verse, it says, will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Isn't that a beautiful thought? That God says, I'm going to be a shadow for you. I was out yesterday in the sun. I was trying to talk to someone, and that sun was right in my eyes. And what I saw, there was a kind of a tree that I could move into the shadow of it and block the sun, and where I could communicate better. You know, when I think about this verse, about God's shade, I get that picture of someone crawling through the desert. Someone going through a constant hard time where the sun is just beating down on them and beating down on them and beating down on them. You know, maybe that's your situation today. And maybe something that is in your life that causes fear right now is something that's been constant and consistent and just beating you down for the longest time. And here's what God says. God says, you can rest in my shadow. You can rest in my shade. Another picture that it gives in verse number 2, it says, I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. That not only is God a shade, but He is a fortress. Isn't that a great word? A fortress, you kind of think of the armies up coming after you, and you're behind this giant wall, this fortress, this fortitude, this place where you are protected. It gives me that picture of sometimes the things we're afraid of are those overwhelming things where it feels like everybody's against us, where the attack of an army is coming at us. And God says, here's another picture. Not only am I a shade and a shadow for that's beating down on you, but I'll be a fortress when things are coming at you. In verse number 4, it says, He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wing you will find refuge. This is the image of a mother hen or a mother bird. And when you see that picture of that mother pulling in those baby chicks and putting them under her wing, it's a very personal moment. It's this idea where God is saying, you know, this isn't just me being a big wall that's around you. You need that. But I want you to know, I'm pulling you close. And I'm putting my wing over you. You know, I'm protecting you from whatever storm is raining down on you right now. The last thing we see in 4 is it says, not only is He a wing that you can be under, but His faithfulness will be a shield. And then there's this word rampart, shield and rampart. I mean, we know the shield part of it. God says, I will be your shield. This word that rampart comes from in the Hebrew, it can mean two different things. The NIV, it translates it as rampart. A rampart is sometimes, this hill that you might get behind. You know, it's this this place that you would hide under. But another way that word can be translated is a buckler. And I looked that up because that's the way the ESV translated. It says, God is your shield and your buckler. And I said, what is a buckler? You know, you don't really hear that. So the first thing is the shield. God says a shield is something, it's big, right? It's a defensive weapon. It's not Captain America's shield. It's a full shield that you can get behind. A lot of times you would see in a war tactic, they would make a shield wall where everybody would put their shields up. And you would be behind the shield wall. It's a defensive weapon. But the buckler would be more like a Captain America shield. I kind of like that. It's something small. It's when you're in hand-to-hand combat, when the enemy is right in your face, and you have your sword here, and you've got this buckler, a small shield on your arm that can be used offensively as well as defensively. And I just took that picture to say that God says, you know, not only am I protecting you, not only am I your shade, not only am I this fortress around you, but when you're on that one-on-one where everything is just so powerful and the danger is so real, He said, I'll be your shield for the defense, but I'm even in there when it's right in go time. This picture of God as this faithful protector in just so many different images. I think the reason the psalmist did it that way was because he knew that we were going to get into so many different situations, and it's going to be so easy for us to start disregarding the faithfulness of God because of the attack, because of the storm, because of the sun, because of the armies. He wanted to give us lots of different images. I want to show you also how He wanted to show us the different ways that we might be fearful in this chapter. In verse number 3, it says, surely God will save you from the fowler's snare. I thought that was interesting. And this idea that sometimes the things that we fear in life is the entrapment by our enemies, that someone set a trap for us. That our pathway could be leading to something where there is a trap set. And God said, you know, sometimes you're going to have situations where you're feeling set up. You're feeling like the enemy has just got a hole dug and put some sticks over it. You know, there's something in every corner, and you're going to be fearful to say, God, I can't go down that road because I know that they've set a trap for me. He says in that verse, he said that he will save you from the fowler's snare. You're safe. You can trust God in that situation. In verse number 5, he says this. He said, you will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrows that fly by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys you at midday. He said, one thing that you might be fearful of is, you know, A, just this arrow that flies by day. I mean, y'all might be in some of those situations where there's not a doubt that it's a fearful situation. It's not a doubt that it's a dangerous situation. It's not a doubt that this situation will have implications. It could be something with your children. It could be something with your health. It could be something in your job. You know, whatever it is an arrow by day where you go, there's no hiding this. I'm in a fearful situation. Here's what I want you to know. When you're in a fearful situation that God sees, God knows, God cares, and God will intervene. Well, then you have the terror that comes by night. Isn't that a scary one? It's different than a day terror, right? You know that one's coming. You can see the sword. You can see the arrow. You can see the accusation. You can see the health issue. You can see what's there. And you can say, God, I'm scared of that, but at least I can see it. But it's those things where we go, I didn't even know that was going to happen. Where all of a sudden you're just caught by surprise. I got a phone call this week from Sandy Sigmund. And Dennis, if y'all haven't heard, passed away this. She said, Blake, she said, I was just on the edge of retiring where I could come home and spend more time with him. She said, but now he's gone. It's that fear of the things we don't know. The fear of what could happen. The fear of things that are going to sneak up on us in the night, and we don't even know it's coming. Can I tell you, if you're in fear of things that could happen in the night, focus in on that God sees. He sees in the dark. God knows, God cares, and God will intervene. So how can you not fear? I think as we kind of drop down into here, the psalmist gives us some good ideas on how we can focus in on the faithfulness of God. The first one I want to show you is down in verse number 11. Verse number 11, after he says in 9 and 10, if you say the Lord is my refuge and make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you, no disaster will come near your tent. Verse number 11, for he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against the stone. You will tread on the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent. Here's what I want to tell you today, that God, one way that he intervenes in our life is sometimes he just sends spiritual help for us. Sometimes it's things that we can't explain any other way other than to say, I was in this situation, but God changed it. I like those situations, right? I mean, I like the ending of them where you just kind of say, man, I saw God do a miracle. We see it all through the Bible. We see it, Moses, you know, being led by God and by an angel. We see David. We see Joseph. We see Paul in prison, Peter in prison. We see Philip being led out to speak to the Ethiopian about Jesus by an angel. We see this idea of angels and of spiritual things that God does specifically for his people. Now, this idea of a guardian angel, yeah, biblically, it's a little bit hard to show where God says that we have guardian angels, but we have a host of angels that at any time God can send into your life. Had a meeting last night. I was at HEB, and a guy that I knew when my kids were a little bit, in fact, it would have been, probably Shay was just born at this time. We were friends with this family, and one of his daughters was a friend of Samantha's. Her name's Amanda. And we were just catching up in front of HEB about what's going on with our children. And I said, "Well, how's Amanda?" And he said, "Well, I'm glad to report she's fine, but this really could have been a different conversation." I said, "Well, what do you mean a different conversation?" He said, "She's in Dallas right now." And he said, "She's a school counselor at this school in Dallas, public school, kind of a rough area." He said, "Just the other day, last week," she said, "she was out greeting students as they were coming in." And she said, "All of a sudden, something just stirred up in her about a particular student that was walking up." She said she approached the student, and I think his name was Jose or something like that. And she said, "Jose, are you okay?" And she said it was like a mask was pulled down over his face at that time, where she just sensed that something was wrong. She said, "Dad," in that moment, she said, "I think God just took over." She said, I just felt this, everything slow down. I realized something was happening here. And she said, "So I went and got security, and they escorted Jose into another area." He said in his backpack were three guns and multiple cases of ammunition, where he was going to come to the school today and shoot it up. And you just say, God just sent an angel right there, right? He just sent something in her spirit to say, hey, this is a dangerous situation. And sometimes God will do that. Sometimes God will do that. Other times, God has other ways of being with us in fearful times. We keep on reading in verse number 14. "Because he loves me," says the Lord. So right here, we kind of have a transition going on in this psalm where David had talked about his love for God. And all of a sudden, he almost, it's like the Holy Spirit takes over David and speaks as God would speak. So he says, "Because he loves me," said the Lord, "I will rescue him and I will protect him." Listen, God is acting, whether it's by sending angels or spiritual uneasiness or excitement in our spirit. But sometimes he acts in our favor in different ways. The first thing we see is God will rescue us. God will rescue us. That's a good one. When we're in the fearful place, sometimes God just says, "I'm going to rescue from that," right? "I'm going to rescue. I'm going to do something that is going to protect you in the middle of that in a way that you know without a shadow of a doubt that what is happening is a rescue. I'm going to rescue from the situation that you're in." But the next one, it says, "I will protect." I think sometimes God protects us by not letting us get into bad situations, right? Sometimes we get really mad at God because we say, "Hey, I want to go there. I want to get there faster. I want to do this. I, why are you taking so long to answer this prayer? Why didn't my car have gas in it this morning?" You know, we say, "God, I don't understand." But if we just could pull it back and focus in on the faithfulness of God, we could say, perhaps God at that moment is simply saying, "I'm protecting you." I had one of those the other day where I was going up the road past Whitney in y'all's house, right? I was going past y'all's house. And if y'all know, there's like this little blind corner on this little bitty skinny road that's just past their house. And as I'm going up there, just all of a sudden, I just go, "I just need to slow down." And I kind of tap my foot on the brake right as a car whips around that corner and into my lane and then over. And I just thought, man, just God, you just protected me, right? And there was just something that made me want to just slow down just a little bit. And guys, we love it when God rescues us or when God protects us. But let's keep reading. He said, "He will call on me, and I will answer him, and I will be with him in trouble." Now, that's the part we don't like. God says, "I will be with him." I like that part, don't get me wrong. But he says, sometimes the way that God intercedes is he says, "I'm going to be with you in the middle of it. And you're going to have to go through it. And you're not going to be able to see what's down the road or what's on the other side of it. But I am going to be with you." I guess I'm picking on Sam a little bit today. Hey, Sam. I was in Tyler, Texas earlier this week at that convention I was telling you about. And it brought back a memory. It brought back a memory in Tyler. There was this kind of a fun place. I guess you'd almost give it a picture of a Chuck E. Cheese or something like that. Chuck E. Cheese, that's why I always called him a Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, it wasn't really a pizza place, but they had all kinds of games and stuff in there, and they had these tunnels. Have y'all seen these before? Where you climb up the tunnel, and it actually shoots across the ceiling and down and around and all this, where kids can crawl and play. And I was a youth pastor in Tyler, and for a overnight event, we had rented out this place. And we were going to stay all night in this place with teenagers. It's really built for kids, but teens had fun there too, especially when there's no kids around where they could be kids. And so we had rented it. And before the evening got too far, Rebecca had come up and brought Samantha. Now, Samantha's 4, maybe 5 at this time. And, you know, she's got this entire playground with a bunch of teenagers, and she's just going, "Oh, this is great." And I remember encouraging her to start climbing up this tunnel. And it was like you would climb a little bit this way, and you'd have a shelf, and then you'd climb up, and you'd have a shelf. And by the end of it, you worked your way all the way to the ceiling, and then you could crawl through these tunnels around this place. And I remember Sam got about 3 levels up. She just stopped. And you could just see this look of fear on her face. And, you know, as her dad, I'm down here on the floor, and I can see up there, and I can see she's stopped, and I can see she's scared. And, you know, I'm just going, "You're fine, Sam. Just keep going." But she wasn't going to keep going. You know, she was terrified. You know, just this thought of, and I said, "Well, then come back down." But no, you know, it wasn't a come back down. It was a come get me, right? It was, "I'm scared. I don't even want to try to go back down. I am just completely full of fear." Well, I had that choice. I could even leave my kid up on the 3rd level screaming. It went through my mind. Or I could get in that tunnel that was built for 10-year-olds. Now, I wasn't as fat as I am now. But even at, you know, 25, 26, 27, maybe 30, I was probably about 30 at that point, you know, I'm still up over 200 pounds, and I'm just thinking, I don't even know if I can make that up there. But I said, "What can I do?" And so I entered into the tunnel, and I went to the first shelf and scooted around the second shelf, and I finally got to her. And when I got to her, her face changed immediately. And she didn't want to come down anymore. Do you know what she wanted to do? Keep going up. She just wanted me there with her while she was going up. And isn't that something? I'm kind of the same way. I don't want God yelling, "Go, Blake, you can do this." I want God right beside me. It doesn't matter if God is in, you know, the same room that I'm in. It matters if God is right beside me in that situation. And I think that's what the psalmist is saying here. He said, when he's talking for God, he says, God says, "I will be with you in trouble." Guys, let me tell you, if you get this picture of the faithfulness of God and you're in the middle of the situation that you may be in right now that is causing you so much fear, here's that thought: that God sees what I'm going through. He knows what I'm going through. He cares about it. And he has crawled up right beside you. And he's there with you. And you can keep going forward knowing that God is faithful. And he's right there with you. I'll end just on something in this last verse, in verse number 16, it says, "With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation." You know, one of the things we fear the most is death. And I started thinking about that. You know, there's been so many funerals lately. I just got back from going to the celebration of life for Janice Glick yesterday. And Chris Pace was there, and he was doing the service. And I was just starting to think about some of the words he said. And one of those thoughts that just came is that this thought of a long life, a lot of times we look at someone who passes away in their 40s or their 50s and say, where was God then? Why didn't they have a long life? But as you think about it, time isn't how God describes a long life. I mean, God says a day is like 1,000 years, 1,000 years is like a day. This idea of a long life, it's all in comparison. I think what a long life is, that it is a complete fulfillment of what we have to do. A life is a fulfillment. And while we're still here, God is going to let us walk with him through whatever comes until our life is completely fulfilled in what he had for us to do. You don't have to fear dying early because you can't. God's there for you. And God is seeing what's going on in your life if it's a medical issue. And he knows, and listen, he cares. And he might intervene and say, your fulfillment of days are over. You lived the long life. But here's one thing that Chris said. Chris said, here's what I know. The second that they wake up in heaven, the second Janice woke up in heaven, she had no desire to come back. She's standing in front of her loving Father. She's standing in front of Jesus. She's completely fulfilled. If you fear death right now, I want you to know that God sees you and he knows that fear. He cares deeply. And the way he'll intervene is with incredible love that you can't imagine when that day comes. Fear. What are you doing today? Are you focusing on your situation? Are you focusing on the faithfulness of God? To end the service today, we're just going to sing a song of reflection. Where you sit today,